Welcome to the Belle Isle Detroit Sports Car Challenge. With my apologies for those of you who are listening back in the UK. The car's out on the circuit for the final practice before qualifying for this afternoon's pole setting qualifying sessions for the 10th round of the American Le Mans Series, the Detroit Sports Car Challenge. Delighted to say that we're linked up with our sports car community around the globe via RadioLeMans.com and Globecast on Sky Channel 0157.
I'm up back up just a little bit.
This morning in the first session, Sasha Masson and Ryan Briscoe were quickest for Penske Porsche. With Chris Dyson and Guy Smith behind them in second position.
Audi's probably a couple back.
Just listening to some of the team radio there, which we'll allow them to get on with for a little while, as they clearly don't want the whole world to hear what's going on. Now, unfortunately, we're short of internet again, so my apologies for not being able to answer any of the emails that you have been sending us. We're still working on this facility to get one or two of the communications problems resolved. And I'm afraid the lack of internet is one of them. However, hopefully, those of you who've been with us for the last few races, when we've been on a telephone line, will notice that we're now talking to you crystal clear down an ISDN line, which should make life a little bit better for you. I'm going to go straight down to the pit lane and introduce you to our pit lane team this weekend. It's Bernadette Sanicola, and first of all, here's Jamie Howe. Jamie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. It's a beautiful day in Detroit.
Absolutely is, and it's perfect for qualifying. Now, this morning, problems for Tafel Racing, and it doesn't look those like either of those cars, Jamie, are going to make it out into this session.
Yeah, that's too bad. That number 73 car with Jim Tafel, and it was the first to go. And then in the last 5 minutes of the session, we saw the number 71 car with Robin Liddell behind the wheel. It hit the wall just ever so slightly, but it did a lot of damage to that Porsche 911. So it really is too bad for that Tafel team, because that's a team that's done a lot of work over the season. We're in round 10 now, and they've done everything that they could. They've improved the cars every single weekend. So it is too bad to see them not out for qualifying today.
Thanks, Jamie. At the other end of the pit lane is Bernadette Sanicola, back with the American Le Mans Series radio network. And just about everyone who can go out has gone out of the pit lane at the moment in beautiful conditions. Which end of the pits are you at, Bernadette, and what can you tell us?
Well, I'm near the Audi and Porsche side, and I'm actually right before to the end of the last practice. I found out that the Intersport Creation Judd that was hit a couple times, luckily no permanent damage. It was all surface damage, just bodywork that had to be repaired. So good news for the number 37 car.
Thank you very much, ladies, and more from the pit lane in just a little while. It's Romain Dumas who's setting the pace with a 1:16.5, comparing favourably to the 1:15.6 that came at the end of the session this morning. Expect to see those times drop as we head towards qualifying. We'll try and give you a steer on who will be doing the qualifying for the top teams, in fact, all of the teams on the American Le Mans Series. A couple of things to tell you about if you are just joining us for the first time this weekend. We've got the Viper back, primetime race group, $7.90 the ticket, the Dodge Viper competition coupe with Joel Feinberg and Chapman Ducot at the wheel. That primer coloured car is back in the race this weekend, and also returning to the American Le Mans Series in the back with us again. Great to have Patrick Long for Flying Lizards in the 44 car, sharing with Darren Law, Seth Nyman, with family commitments this weekend. So great to have them back, and welcome back to the series for them. The Audis this morning were a little off the pace, and at the moment are still 2 seconds away from a good time. Butch Leitinger, and indeed his teammate this morning, Chris, should I say Guy Smith it was, wasn't it, in the 20 car, proving that the privateer, other privateer run RS Spiders are just as quick as the DHL Penske cars. And Pat Long indeed is in. We mentioned him in the 44 Lizards at the moment. Has the fastest time, 1:26.8. And that it's been some time since the 44 car, as Jim Roller reminds me, has led one of the sessions. And really important if the 45 Lizard is to have any chance at all of the championship, that that car gets amongst the Ferraris and keeps them from scoring points. The kerfuffle in Mosport still to be sorted out. I do believe we're going to have a statement from IMSA at some stage today about that particular situation where the pace car confusion caused, well, one team in the shape of Panos to withdraw from the race, and the 45 Flying Lizard being assessed a penalty, a two-lap penalty. Now, the 45 team are asking for the race in GT2 at least to be called null and void and have no points awarded whatsoever. Obviously, they appreciate they can't be reinstated into the results and have their two laps credited, and they've suggested that, in fact, the GT2 points are wiped and everyone goes back to where they were before Mosport. We find out what happens with that a bit later on today. Let's go back down the pit lane. Early pit callers coming in. We welcome back also, by the way, the Transport Porsche, who've been away for a race or two. Tim Pappas and Terry Borchella are back there right opposite me in the pit lane. Only one Panos again this weekend. That's the 22 car. That's in pit lane. And I'm glad to see that the number 8 BK Motorsports Mazda's back out again. That car again had problems this morning, Jamie, but it's good to see it back out again.
That's right, John. They had a couple of problems, but the ultimate reason they went behind the wall was because they wanted to change their oil pump back to the one that they've been using all season long. They made that change, they're back out on track, and they're expecting to finish the session.
Thank you, Jamie. As times are starting to come down already, the head of the field. And it's at the moment in GT2, Pat Long from Jamie Milo. By half a second, Peter Dumbreck in third place for the 31 Peterson White Lightning Ferrari. Peter, of course, as many of the drivers in the American Le Mans Series, has never been here to this circuit. There are one or two drivers who have been around long enough, dare I suggest, that they have raced on this track. A few minor revisions since the open wheel cars used it the last time. Stefan Johansson's driven here. I think Brian Hurt has probably driven here as well. I'm not sure how many of the other drivers will have had the opportunity to, but they got to grips with it very quickly this morning. Let's go down to the pit lane. And in second place at the moment for the 62 Ricci Ferrari is Jamie Milo. Second place in GT2. His teammate is Mika Salo, and he's with Bernadette right now.
Mika Salo, who's had a lot of luck so far in practice, done really well, but mostly you've won, you and your partner have won all three of the street courses to date. Do you think that your luck's going to extend to this race in Detroit?
The car's working really well, and it's very easy to drive, so that's the key for the street courses, and he's still doing exactly the same. So you just have to try to avoid any contact with the wall or other cars, and I think we should be there.
Any major adjustments over from your last practice?
No, nothing big. Car's been good from the beginning, so we don't need to change it too much. So
the biggest factor for you is just traffic and staying out of trouble, right?
Exactly, and learn a little bit about the tires and track more. It's new track for everybody, so just to try to find every little bump so we know where we are.
Thank you very much. Mika Salo.
Thank you to Bernadette down there in the pit lane with Mika Salo. Now let's see who's moving up. The Acuras were very quick this morning. The three Acura team cars. David Brabham with the fastest time of 16 dead. And behind him in fifth place was Adrian Fernandez, Luis Diaz. Sixth for the 26 Herter and Franchitti car. And they were tied together. In fact, at one stage, they were first, second and third before the Porsches picked up their game at the end of that session this morning. Into the pit lane has come Romain Dumas. And They're looking front and rear of that car as if he's maybe run over something, maybe gone over a curb too hard. The ubiquitous computer being plugged into the left-hand side. In fact, there's a driver change going on at the moment. Romain Dumas jumps out of that car on the driver's left and walks around the back of the car. Some brake temperatures and tyre temperatures being taken by the team. But otherwise, no other work going on. Interesting to see them having a look at Michelin tyre technician now under the left front wheel of that car, having a good look at it. Listening to the American Le Mans Series radio network live from Detroit Belle Isle for the Detroit Sports Car Challenge presented by Bosch. Round 10 of the American Le Mans Series. Out goes Timo Bernard onto the very white, pristine looking concrete that forms a part of this circuit. Super work being done by Roger Penske and the rest of the organising team here. Now this morning, very early on, David Brabham went out there and put in a cracking time, a 16 flat. Told us this morning he was very pleased with the car and actually quite surprised at how much grip he was getting. And at the moment the 9 car with his teammate Stefan Johansson on board is in P3, position 3, third overall, 1:17.2, so not quite as quick as this morning. Let's see how David's feeling a little later on this afternoon with Jamie down in the pit lane.
David, you were awfully pleased this morning with the performance of this Acura machine, as you should be. Do you expect the same thing from this afternoon session now, but a little bit more rubbers down on track?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it's like, because obviously when we first went out this morning, we were the first ones on the track. It was very green, a bit slippery, but not too bad. I was expecting it to be a little bit worse. So, Stefan's in the car now. We've made a few changes in between the sessions, so we're getting a bit of a feel for that, and just really getting prepared for qualifying, because I think it's going to be pretty important around here. And then work on a race setup.
Who's going to qualify the car? You or David? Who's going to qualify the car, you or David?
Oh, I am, apparently, yeah.
All right. We'll let you get ready to go. I know you're going to get in the car again before qualifying, yeah. So good luck.
Thank you.
Down to Bernadette, the other end of the pit lane.
And I'm with Romain Dumas, who just stepped out of the car. So far, it's been going well for your team. Doesn't look like you guys had to make any major changes at the last practice. You got a lot out of practice. How's the track, and how's your car doing so far?
Well, we changed a lot of car. On the setup side, I think now we have a good car. It's the track also improved, I think, with a IRL car before. So, I mean, it's difficult. The temperature is now higher. So we have to work for the qualify. Timo will qualify. So now he's on the car for all the rest of the session. I just want 10 minutes to be a little bit more confident. And we'll see. I mean, I think for the qualify, it will be an again story because the traffic is so big outside you, it's very difficult to have a clear lap, so they will enjoy a lot of qualify to be alone.
And is there a big difference from this morning too, when the track was kind of dusty? This was the first session on the track, now you're the last session. What's the difference? What's the feel out there?
It's improving for sure, the grip, improving a lot on the corner 3, 4, 5, all before the long straight. It's a little bit better now. I don't know if it's us, I mean the track or us, we improve the car for sure also, so we have to see, but it will be the same for tomorrow, so we have to adjust all the time.
Right, thank you very much. Romain Dumas, back to you, John.
Thanks, Bernadette. Red flag out on the circuit. That has stopped the... green flag has come back on now. I think that might have just been a little timing glitch on the screen because everyone is still running at top speed. Still the Transport Porsche right opposite me, the Terry Porcella and Tim Pappas car, is sitting along pit lane. It's been out and done one lap and come straight back in. They seem to be looking at tyre pressures on that car, as in comes the 06 Citroën Sport, the red and white Lola with the Muscle Milk sponsorship. Behind him is... Now, that is... It's the one Audi, I think, with Dindo Capello. Yes, it is, the silver and red helmet, just coming in along pit lane as well. He's the best of the Audis in fifth position overall. And it looks like a lot of cars have come into the pits. Maybe the red flags were thrown just for a moment. Certainly showed that on the timing and scoring monitor. Let's go back down to Jamie for just another update for a moment. And Jamie, these teams who have been losing time are really struggling, and because there's not a huge amount of time for the guys to get out there and dial the car in. And really, with qualifying coming up, anybody who's not on the track now is going to struggle later on.
That's right, John. And one of the teams that's not getting a whole lot of track time right now is Team Transport, as you mentioned. They did one lap, they're stuck in pit lane. Tim Pappas is standing by. Tim, what is the team doing right now with the car?
We're just doing ins and outs, working on the setup, trying to figure this place out. It's new for us, like everyone else. And we're just trying a lot of different things.
Is this all a guessing game when you come to a new track? Do you have anything at all to base it off of?
Well, the other street circuits that we went to, where we were at St. Petersburg, where there's a mix of asphalt and concrete, a little bit like Houston, where they've scarified the concrete here. We have a little bit of an idea.
How important is it to be on track every single minute of every session just to get a feel for it?
Yeah, it's really important to maximize the time. All the red flags and everything that goes on is it's very difficult for us and for everyone else. So we'd like to be out there even longer.
All right, after this practice session is qualifying, who's going to qualify the car, you or Terry?
Terry will.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Good to have those guys back, being away for a couple of races. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series, Radio Network. Trackside at Belle Isle, Detroit. Now, you know, as someone who used to watch motor racing from here a few years ago, that is not something I thought I would ever hear myself saying. I am just on the start-finish line. The car's streaking towards me at 150 miles an hour, separated from my TV screens and myself by a couple of panes of glass, a bit of concrete and a catch fence. Through goes the Ferrari right in front of me. Tremendous stuff to be this close to the cars. We don't often get the sensation of speed that we're having this weekend. And good to have so many of you listening back in at home in the UK and Europe, where the time is 20 minutes to 9 on a Friday night. Quick rundown of the times with 20 minutes of this hour gone. Sascha Massa now with the fastest time of 16.4. 1 minute 16.4 then for the 6 car. 1 minute 16.5 for the 7 car of Timo Bernhard. The DHL Penske Porsches showing their pace again. Third place now, Stefan Johansson, a 17.2. 1.17.2 for the 9 car. 1.17.3 for the 16 of Andy Wallace. And into the wall is the number 8 car. Ben Devlin's been pushing this car ever harder these last couple of weeks. Had a wee spin this morning at turn number 8, and I think it might be turn 8 again actually that he's had this problem. He's got a bit further around the corner this time. He just ran on this morning, and that will be a red flag. More on the times in a moment, but let's take this opportunity to speak to Bill Oberlin down in the Pinos pit.
Bill, when we spoke this morning, you said that the team had completely missed the setup of the car for this particular track. Now the car is back behind the wall. What's going on?
Well, maybe they didn't miss the setup. Maybe we're missing something that's actually broken now, and finally the breakage is getting bigger and bigger. And now Joey went out and the car was doing something really nasty. So I said, look, before we send this thing into the wall and have a really bad day, let's take it back. Now the crews run back to the truck real quick. They're going to look at the chassis, the frame, the suspension, and see if maybe there's a crack developing that's allowing the whole thing to flex or who knows what. But they got to take another look at it before something falls off.
I know you're listening on the radio. What did Joey describe it as?
You know what Joey described it as? He goes, this is something I have never felt before in my driving career. So whatever that is, that's exactly what it is. If anybody knows what that is, please come and talk to the Panos Motor Group. We'll use your help.
All right. Well, if there's any team that can figure it out, it would be Team PPG. And I'm sure that by the end of the session, they'll have some idea of what's going on. Hopefully, they'll make it out for qualifying because it is Joey's turn to qualify. I know Bill wants to get back in the car before the race comes. So hopefully, they can get this thing under control.
Thanks, Jamie. It sounds like it's got a broken bar, I think. I think that's what it is. They'll find it was a broken bar somewhere, and that's why it's moving around so much. I just made that up as I was going along. Thank you very much to our technical team back in the UK who have stepped in at short notice and fixed the problem back at home. One or two of you were a little worried that we started a little bit late, but we were running a bit behind this evening. So thanks very much to Eve and Carl back in the UK for using their respective logistic and brain powers to make sure that we are speaking to you on the internet and indeed on Sky Channel 0157, our satellite broadcast. Also via this weekend, at least via XM Satellite Radio Sport Nation on Channel 144. Now that will not be live this weekend. That's delayed into the late evening, round about 9:30, I believe, on Sunday night. And also the Speed Channel broadcast and will not be live. The race is 3 till 6 Eastern, but I believe that Speed are going to tape till 8. Now, what that means for the Motors broadcast back in the UK, I'm not entirely sure. UK and Europe, I'm not entirely certain. Maybe that is also tape delayed as well. But for certain, you will be able to hear full live and exclusively uninterrupted coverage and commentary of the LMS 10th round here on the radio network. Let's take the opportunity before we go back to the timing and scoring. There's a bit of clear-up still to do and some tyre wall to repair, to talk to Chris Dyson. Steady improvement for the Porsche RS Spiders has been the order of the day through this season. The team getting to grip with their second new car in as many seasons in the American Le Mans Series. However, fourth and fifth on the timing and scoring monitor as of now, and a good showing this morning with Guy Smith in second place must be a very pleasing sight for Chris Dyson.
Here with Chris Dyson. John just mentioned that it must be a pleasing sight from the practice this morning to what you guys are accomplishing now. Improvements every day and every race. How do you feel about the race so far, about the practice session so far?
I think we rolled off the truck with a fairly good car. You know, we made some good progress in the first session. The package is decent, and, certainly around here, I think, you know, it's just a matter of getting a clear lap and getting some temperature in the tires, and we seem to be doing okay with that.
I talked to one of the members of your team here, and they said no major adjustments.
Put your hands up! 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 Cause the wind up with me alright now. You do so, baby, come out of here.
Locast Radio. The incisive view on motorsport. The inside and honest view on new cars. Plus updates on automotive matters. Locast Radio. By people who love cars, for people who love cars.
I love cars, I love sports, I love music. Locast Radio.
Look at those guys when they play the hits on the radio, and the pretty young girls when they shake their hips on a television show.
Channel 0157 and on the web 0157.org. Globecast Radio.
to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me...
Little things here and there. The car's running fine so far?
Yeah, generally. We made some pretty sizable changes this morning. We sort of struggled in the first few runs, but made some changes, and the back end's under control now, and we're up near the top of the charts, which is a good thing.
We've heard mixed reviews on this track. Do you prefer a street course in comparison to the other tracks? Do you like this track so far? How do you feel about it?
Well, it's great to be out here in the city of Detroit.
All right, end of sentence. Thank you very much, Chris Dyson. Now over to Jamie Howe.
Hi, Bernadette. I'm standing here with Luis Diaz from Los Fernandez Racing. Luis, you just climbed out of this Acura machine. You drove this morning. How has the track changed from then to now?
I mean, it feels actually more slippery than before. I don't know if it's maybe the weather, that it's a little bit hotter or what, but it feels a little bit slippery. You know, it's kind of tricky. That's why I think a lot of people have make a little bit more mistakes than usual. But it's going to be a tough race. I mean, but the Los Acura Fernandez Racing team is doing a good job, giving us a good car, and I think we're doing the right changes right now. John Ward and John Hennig have made good calls for the car, and I think we should be in good shape.
As we get closer into qualifying, is the competition getting a little more strong out there?
Oh yeah, yeah. Everybody's putting the best that they have, and but it's fun. It's fun.
What do you think you can expect from this qualifying session this afternoon?
Well, hopefully we can put the low sucker in the pole, and that will be nice. But, I mean, it's going to be very tough. You know, all the Acuras, the Porsches are strong, so we have to keep pushing. I mean, you never know what is going to happen.
You say that laughing, but we did have the Highcroft Acura on pole at the Houston Street Circuit, so it could happen. Don't laugh about it.
No. I'm serious.
All right. Thank you. Good luck.
Good stuff from Luis Diaz with Jamie Howe. Before that, Bernadette Sanicola. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network. Coming up to 28 minutes of the hour-long session, qualifying to come. Four poles to be set for the Detroit Sports Car Challenge presented by Bosch here, the 10th round of the American Le Mans Series this weekend on the newly refurbished and reopened Belle Isle circuit here, just, about 5 or 10 minutes from downtown Detroit. The place, I would say, has never looked any better, and the helicopter shots are really the only way to do this place justice, and indeed to just show how quick these cars are through some of these circuits. 2.1 miles around with 14 and a half corners, because this one in front of me that I keep talking about isn't numbered, but they're taking a racing line through it. I reckon that makes it a corner, and really it's very quick indeed in places. And the long sweeping backstretch on the waterfront between turn 7 through to turn 8, which must be 3 or 4 lanes wide, is tremendous. David Bradman was telling me at lunchtime, it reminds him very much of Albert Park, the Grand Prix venue in Australia. And as soon as he said that, it hit me like a hammer to the head, that where I was trying to rack my brains that this place had reminded me of since I got here early this morning. And that's exactly right. It does look like Albert Park, with the mixture of green, and very green it is indeed. It looks like that grass has been there forever. Tremendous work with very established and mature trees around the area, and then the waterfront and the river either side, of course. Big yacht basin here as well. plenty of room for entertainment. The XM stage, where we're going to be having some live music this weekend, as well as various car corrals. And a big corporate presence here this weekend, as you might expect, with seven major manufacturers represented in the American Le Mans Series. Three tyre companies here this weekend. And on the doorstep of Motor City Detroit, who are clearly beginning an upcycle now in this area. Definitely a lot of inward investment. You've only got to look at the boats in the harbour and the lineup of cars in the car park at the shuttle area. We were giving you a bit of a rundown of the times this morning, practice session. Let's talk about GT2 for a moment. Pat Long with a 1:26.3. Lap records all to be set, of course, here this weekend. The best GT2 time this morning was by Jean-Maria Bruni on a 1:26.2. So Pat has almost got down to that, less than a tenth away from it. Jamie Mello was second quickest before this red flag caused by the 8 car, the Master of Ben Devlin. Still a little bit of remedial work going on the tyre barrier there before we can restart. Third place in GT2 is Eric Ellery in the 61 Ricci car. And in fourth place is Peter Dumbreck in the 31 car. And in... No, that's a bit confusing. I've got him twice on the timing screen. Next up is the 45 Flying Lizard. And basically between the top half dozen, 1:28.2 to 1:26.3. A couple of seconds, so things, I'm sure, will tighten up. More from the timing screen once we get restarted. Let's go back down and join our pit lane reporting team, starting with Jamie Howe.
John, I have an update on both of the Tafel cars. When we entered the practice session this morning, we mentioned that both of those cars had been in the top three at one point in time. So the Tafel team had some things to be happy about. And another thing that they can be happy about right now is that the number 73 car is going to come back into pit lane. They're going to go back out, do a little bit more in the practice session. They're going to qualify that car. Unfortunately, the number 71 car will not be making it out at this time. They're hoping to get it out by the end of qualifying. The car's back together from the contact this morning. However, they're having to change out the transmission. So hopefully that Tafel crew can get the car back together with the transmission in it by the end of the qualifying session.
Thanks very much, Jamie. Yeah, the 71 car was Robin Liddell tapping the wall and doing an inordinate amount of damage to the left rear. 73 car came together with the 45 Flying Lizard, did the front radiator, much lesser damaged car. Let's go down to GT2 and the man who's posted fastest time. You know, he goes away from the American Le Mans Series, he comes back and straight away he's back on the pace. Well, quite frankly, I've watched enough of this young man to know that I wouldn't expect anything different. Welcome back to the series for Pat Long in the number 44 Flying Lizard, who's with Bernadette right now.
Patrick, John just said, and I extend that welcome back to the American Le Mans Series. You are right behind the GT2 leader. You must be proud of yourself so far.
Yeah, it's always good to be back in the American Le Mans Series. In a lot of ways, this is a home for me after coming back from a long career in Europe to start my U.S. career with the American Le Mans Series. It's been kind of sad not to be here all season, but always good being with the Lizards. They're a home away from home for me. I've been driving with them for the last couple of years, and so far the Porsche is really strong. The Ferraris have been pretty dominant this year, so I've come in to try to offer any support I can to the 44 car and to the whole team. Johannes and Jörg have been up in a championship battle all year, so I'm here to support them and help them in any way I can.
All right, Patrick, we're happy to have you back. It looks like we're going back to green, John.
We certainly are. The cars flood out of the pit lane. We'll just let the noise die down for a second. And as the back end of the pit lane clears, that's perfect, because that's where Jamie Howe is, right opposite from me in the team Cytosport Muscle Milk sponsored team pit. Klaus Graf with Greg Pickett again this weekend, and it's good to see them back in the series as well, Jamie.
It is good to see them back in the series, Klaus. You've done several races throughout the season, none of them back-to-back. How does the team pick which races to come to and which ones to skip on?
Well, that's the boss' decision. He makes the call. Back-to-back races is probably still a little bit too much for us. We're still, you know, young team and learning. So going to Canada and then come here 1 week, 2 weeks in a row, it's we thought it put maybe too much stress on the team. So we decided just come here after Road America and hopefully we can repeat our success from there.
How much development has been done on these cars since its first round earlier in the season?
Quite a lot, actually. I mean, we developed pretty much in every area. Engine with AR. We got some updates from Lola. Now we have the new nose running. We work with Dunlop more to get better on the tires. So pretty much every area we try to improve, and the Muscle Milk Lola runs better and better every time.
How pleased have you been with the results that have come from all of these developments on the car?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for us, we have to look at different objectives a little bit than some of the factory teams. You know, we're still a fairly young team. We have to finish the races, do a lot of laps. We accomplished that. We finished twice third in class in LMP1 and had two top 10 finishes overall. And really, it's stiff competition, you know, against all the other teams there out there. So we're very pleased with our results so far.
What other races can we see you at this year, and what are your expectations for the end of the season?
Well, we're going to finish the season, basically, so we're going to do Petit Le Mans and Laguna Seca. And our goals are still the same, basically finish on the podium, LMP1. Get a bit closer to the rest of the pack, so to speak. So we were close already this morning, and so we'll just keep working on that, and hopefully we have another good run here.
All right, that's Klaus Graf with Cytosport. And this team is it's in their development year. They're learning a lot about the car, a lot about the team, a lot about the tracks that we visit. So we are going to see them back for the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll keep seeing you on the podium.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Yeah, worth mentioning just how much work's gone into that 06 car of Cytosport. As Jamie mentioned, they haven't been around at all of the races. It is a P1 car, of course, the Lola B06 14 AER Turbo. Klaus Graf, talking about development there, Klaus Graf very much known for his development skills for a car, did a huge amount of the testing and the heavy lifting in the development phase of the second of the Peugeot's Roadster prototypes, the LMP07, with the tiny little Zytec engine up front. Chat with the guys from Zytec the other day, actually. I was up at Silverstone for the A1 GT launch, so hello to John Manchester and the rest of the Zytec guys. That car, the Zytec Works car, due to be here for Petit Le Mans and possibly for Laguna Seca as well. And Ian Bickerton from Creation informing me towards the end of Canada, and I just, because Canada was so exciting, I didn't manage to get this in. We've got a text from Ian part of the way through the race, and Ian telling me two cars from Creation at Petit Le Mans. And if I just pull that up, he was delighted about how strong the piece of Creation that was attached to one of the Porsches were. Creation with the Creation LMP1 car, JCW in the car with a surprise addition to the team for Laguna. All the team can't wait to get back in the ALMS. And good luck to Intersport and Autocon was the message. No Autocon this weekend, as we've got the Peugeots going slowly. This is the Robertson Racing LLC Peugeot Esperante. David and Andrea Robertson with David Murray. And that car is motoring very slowly around the circuit. Got a ways to go before the pit lane as well. Andy Wallace just blown by it. No major changes in the times. No, 16.4 still the fastest. And the session has been stopped. And there you heard Bob Leitinger, Butcher's father, on the team radio to Andy Wallace, his son's teammate. And this is for the stalled Robertson Racing car. Right, he's got all the way back to the pit lane entrance and just couldn't get into the pit lane. It is David Robertson at the wheel of that car. Gives us a chance to look through the GT2 times in a little more detail. And there's been a change at the top with Jamie Mailow now with the fastest time at 25.7, half a second ahead of the 44 Lizard. The Porsche in second then. Third, Gian Maria Bruni. Just on 3/4 of a second behind. Ralph Kellen is in fourth position in the 18 Porsche. Kellen and Bruni separated by 0.001 of a second. We actually could not get any closer as far as they were concerned. Then Dirk Müller for the 31 Peterson White Lightning Porsche. Behind Dirk in sixth position, Johannes van Overbeck in the 45 Flying Lizard. Should just mention that the Viper a little way off the pace at the moment. Some 10 seconds or so off the pace of the fastest cars in the class. This is the 11 primetime race group. Very much in a work in progress, that car. And it was Chapman Ducote who was at the wheel of that. Also the 53 car struggling, as we've mentioned, that Robertson Racing machine. That car slower than the Viper this in this session. Let's go down to the pit lane. Jamie has more for us. Jamie. Oh, sorry, was it you, Bernadette?
Yep, it's me, Bernadette. Down here in Corvette with a car that had some trouble this morning with collisions, the number 4 Corvette. I'm with Oliver Gavin. I've been told by your teammates that there is no damage to the car despite the hard hits this morning.
No, the car's running fine. It's no problem. The guys did a great job of getting all the bodywork back together, and there was a little bit of damage to the rear frame, but it was nothing real structural. But they did a great job with that, and this session's going okay. There's a lot of red flags, which I think is frustrating a few people. But it's strange because it doesn't seem like the top cars have really gone much faster than this morning, which is surprising. So we're just going to see how it pans out. And it doesn't seem like the track's really picked up that much grip from this morning. Even though you can see the rubber on the track, maybe it's the wrong sort of rubber. So we'll have to see how it pans out. And we've got a little bit quicker, but not many other people have.
Well, I heard you have a very good pit crew. Semi-finals this afternoon with the Klein Pit Tool Challenge.
Yeah, that went extremely well. That was great. You know, the guys have worked so hard through the season. They've done fantastic pit stops at every single race. And, winning that challenge today was, just desserts really for all their hard work. And looking forward to the final now at Laguna and hopefully another check.
Thank you very much, Oliver Gavin.
Green flag once again as the 53 car has been pushed into the pit lane. I noticed that Ollie didn't mention there that in one of the early rounds of the Klein Tools pit crew challenge, he actually had the car in reverse as he was ready to drive it into the pit box. He's improved since then, has the man from Yardley Hastings. In fact, the Corvette crew was a winner of the challenge in its first year. It got knocked off its pedestal last year. And the Pratt and Miller boys desperately want that crown back. Well done to the safety team who have been working hard. They've had their work cut out in the GM Chevy trucks. The IMSA safety team, part of the commitment to safety here on the American Le Mans Series. Now let's go down to the pit lane and welcome back the American Le Mans Series, a team that we haven't seen since Sebring. This is the Robertson Racing Pinos Esperanto, David and Andrea Robinson along with David Murray in that car. Good to have them back, and they've chosen a circuit, Jamie, that couldn't be really any more different than the last time they were here at Sebring.
No, you're right, John. This track is certainly much more different than the track at Sebring. Andrea, I know you were in the car earlier this morning. Your husband just got out of the car. What happened when he was out on track?
He radioed in and said that no power. The engine just quit on him, and he was not able to get it refired. So at this point, we do not know what our problem is.
I know that the other Panos that is also having problems at this time. Do the two Panos team share any information?
Yeah, actually, I mean, we don't share all the information, but Mr. Milner and his boys, we go back and forth at Sebring. We'd ask each other questions. They invited us over to the paddock to kind of look. We've had handling issues with our car since day one, and I know they've had their share of problems, so we've been all kind of going back and forth with each other, like, how can we improve the cars? What did you do to make it drive better, whatnot? So, yeah, they've been pretty good to us. I mean, we're a rookie team. They've been good to us, and yeah, if we can help them out with a spare part or tires, we're happy to even help a competitor. We're not cutthroat.
What is it like to come into a series, particularly in the GT2 class that is so competitive, and just run a couple races for the season?
You're right. It's very competitive. Next year's a full season for us, and I guess we have to get our feet wet eventually, because my husband wanted to move us up into this particular racing. So we were out for a couple months this summer. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he had to have surgery, and I had to take care of him. But as of August, we got to start our training, and and we are back in the car, and we want to be in it as much as possible. So, but yeah, it's competitive, but it's fun.
Are you going to be driving this year at Petite Laguna?
Yes, we'll be there.
What is it like? Why did you choose the American Le Mans Series? You guys could have taken your race car anywhere. What made you come to this particular form of racing?
My husband felt that with the American Le Mans Series, it is just such a class act of driving. And yeah, we could have had our choice. We came up through the ranks with SCCA and whatnot. But his goal was, if we could do the American Le Mans Series, his next goal for us, he would like us to be able to be good enough one day to get an invitation to the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So he's got high goals for us.
With that high goal of going to the 24 Hours of Le Mans, how excited are you and your husband to be able to drive at the 10th anniversary of Petite Le Mans next month?
You know, we're looking forward to it. We are really looking forward to it. It's a fun track also. We like Sebring. We have a fun time at Sebring because the course is challenging. And we've been out at Road Atlanta here practicing, and that's also challenging. And it's going to be just kind of neat to see the people, the smiles, and everything, the excitement that's going on. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we are certainly glad to have you back, and we look forward to a full season next year. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
15 minutes to go, and, you know, everybody wants to be Steve McQueen at Le Mans. That's why the Robertsons are here. Fantastic stuff from Andrea with Jamie there. Last quarter of this hour then, before the cars are dragged back into the pit lane and ready for the qualifying session. Racing change in the transport pit. Bit of a lock-up coming in there by Tim Pappas. It's very slippery on the concrete. Let's have a look at the timing. There's been some changes. Guy Smith in the number 20 Thetford Norcold Porsche. This is the blue and white car. And he's at the top of the timing of 1:15.8, getting close to the quickest time we've seen, a 15.1. I think qualifying this afternoon, if it continues to hold and the weather stays good, we might even see a time in the 1:14 bracket. 1:14.5, any takers for that? For pole position? You never know. Half a second between Guy Smith and David Brabham in second. That's the 20 car from the 9, from the 6 in 3rd. Another half second back, Ryan Briscoe. How great is that? Dyson, Highcroft, Penske Porsche. Three different teams in the top three places. Two different cars as well, of course, with two Porsches and an Acura. Timo Bernhard, less than a second away from the leader in 4th position. Alan McNish is the top P1 car in 5th, but he's over a second behind Guy Smith's time. Le Mans winner in 1998. From Le Mans winner in 2003. A second back, McNish, from Guy Smith. Fernandez in sixth place in the 15 car. Then Andy Wallace in the 16 car in seventh place. Eighth place for the second of the P1s. And that's the number two of Marco Werner. Then Klaus Graf in that team Citroën car. Only 3.5 seconds back from the leader and 10th overall, Ben Devlin. That time from earlier on. I haven't seen the 8 car back out again actually after that shunt. I think that car had quite a bit of damage on the front end. In GT1, it's 3 from 4 with Jan Magnussen leading Olivier Beretta in the battle of the CompuWare Corvettes. Mika Salo has the 62. Bright reds. Giuseppe Ricci Ferrari leading the GT2 class from Darren Law in second place, and it's just over a half a second the gap between first and second. Another half a second back to Dirk Müller in the 31, Peterson White Lightning Ferrari. That's the 31 in third. 45, Johannes van Overbeck in fourth. Two Lizards in the top four, that's good. Jimmy Brunny in fifth position in the GT2 Ferrari, the 61 car. Then it's Ralph Kellenis in sixth position for Rahal Letterman, his teammate, in the pit lane with Jamie.
Tom, I know you drove this morning, you drove again this afternoon. What is different about the track from early in the day to late in the day?
Well, for sure, the one thing is there's a lot more rubber on the track now, so that's a big difference. But really, I mean, the biggest difference, I'm sure, for a lot of people is car setup. We came here not expecting it to be quite as bumpy as it is, so we went quite a bit softer on springs, and that certainly helped the car quite a bit.
How is the competition out there as we approach qualifying?
That's definitely tough. I mean, we were just P4 a second ago, and within, you know, two laps, we're down now P6. So, I mean, obviously, the session before qualifying, everyone's putting new tires on now. So that's what we just did, and we'll see what Ralph can do here.
You're in the Porsche 911 competing against the Ferraris and the Panos. Were you expecting the Porsche to be as strong as it has been at this particular track?
That's tough to say. I mean, every track you go to, it's always a different story. So it seems right now we're not too far off the pace. Obviously, the 62 car is quite a ways ahead of us right now. But, you know, you never know. Come to qualifying, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, our car is not terrible. It's a good race car right now, which is, you know, all we can ask for.
Who's going to qualify the car? What's the plan?
Yeah, Ralph will qualify now for the first time in a while. I've sort of stole the spotlight a little bit, so we'll give him a shot here.
All right. Bernadette standing by with somebody we haven't talked to this weekend, Audi driver Emanuele Pirro.
Emanuele, Audi always does well on street courses and always seems to do good race day no matter how practice goes. But it seems that you guys are battling more mechanical issues than actual competition on the track.
Well, it's still early days, and the track is very nice but really bumpy. So our car, you know, it's an LMP1, so it weighs 300 pounds more than the LMP2s, and we suffer more from the bumps. But we saw in different in previous occasions that by putting more rubber down on the track, we gain more and more grip. We need the grip to be quick, and still, it's early days, as I said.
I noticed in the first practice too, you the car was in the pits a lot. Can you talk about any adjustments that were made or any inside look into adjustments?
Well, right now I think everybody's concern is riding the road in the best possible way. Even the IndyCar guys, I talked to a few of them, and they have the same concern. So right now we have to try to keep the tires on the ground as much as possible.
Well, one thing that's always amazing about Audi too is the ability on race day to always be number one and two no matter how practice goes. Your ability to weave in and out of traffic and driving ability as well.
Well, I don't want to comment the driving ability, but obviously we are here to do our best, and we have a lot of good people beyond the wall, behind the wall in the pits, which always put the best, you know, effort to sort the car out. And most of the times, you know, in the races, the car works really well. So I'm pretty optimistic. This is really a tough circuit, guys. So it's gonna be a hard 2 hours, 45 minutes for everybody, drivers, cars, and mechanics. And I think you need a lot of experience to go through this race.
All right, well, thank you very much, Emanuele Pirro, who normally Audi is in the top five. They're not sitting there today at practice, but sometimes, you know, during race day, they're always back at number one. They seem to fight through the traffic and fight through their issues.
You know, Joe, earlier this morning and some this afternoon as well, we've been talking about how surprising it is to have all three of the Acuras doing so well. But as Tom Blattler from Acura has pointed out to me, every single one of the Acura cars has a driver in it that has multiple starts. In the Lowe's Fernandez racing car, Adrian has started at this Belle Isle track 8 times, starting in 1998, where he finished second place in kart. His teammate, Luis Diaz, started here once in Indy Lights. And then when we move into the 26 car, who's just gone to the top of the timesheets, Brian Herta has driven at this track 7 times. He finished 7th here in 1999. That was his best finish at this track. And then in the Hycroft racing car, Stefan Johansson has started here 5 times. He finished the first race behind Ray Hall. He finished 3rd, and that was in 1992. And also, Stefan Johansson drove in the city of Detroit in F1. He finished 2nd in 1985. So these Acura drivers have a lot of experience around this track, so maybe we shouldn't be so surprised that they were doing so well this morning.
Thanks, Jamie. That's very good. Those of you listening, that was Bobby Ray Hall, by the way, that he was racing, not Graham. Yeah, no, that you didn't say Graham, but I just thought of people thinking, Graham Rahal can't have been racing then, and won't have realised that Bobby is...
About 5 years old then.
Yes, exactly. I know he's still at school now, he would still have been in kindergarten then. Now, here's a question as well, and I think that Formula One race was not on this track. I think that was a different configuration.
It was in downtown Detroit, yeah. It was not at Belle Isle. He's raced at this particular track 5 times.
That's I remember that Formula One race, and it was a tremendous effort by Stefan Johansson. I seem to remember the Tyrrell's going very, very well here, and the normally aspirated car might have won here 1 year, if memory serves, when everyone else was turbocharged. Charles Dressing will remember that, and no doubt even as I'm speaking is relaying my inaccuracies back through Jim Roller in the TV truck. Now, out on the circuit at the moment, I've just been watching onboard pictures, and in fact, Jim Roller was nice enough to replay it for me of the Ryan Briscoe Porsche coming up on traffic, and the closing speeds here on the faster part of the circuit are nothing short of terrifying. Now, I'm used to the wide open spaces of Le Mans where the closing speeds are sometimes 50 or 60 miles an hour. It's all of that here, and there's no runoff area. It is some frustration as well from some of the drivers. Dirk Müller talking himself past the Viper there as he goes through turn number two. The closing speeds are just absolutely incredible. Those of you at the race get a chance to go home and catch speed later on this evening. Those of you in Europe watching on Motors TV, I thoroughly recommend watching very carefully the onboard shots, because I said this morning in practice. You'd say it was like a video game, except there's no video game where the closing speeds are that quick. It wouldn't look realistic. And there's parts of this that actually are so quick, and that gap just disappears. These, particularly the P2 cars that have got so much grip through the medium and quicker corners, and they're braking so late into the slower corners because their downforce is working so well for them. Just outstanding. Brian Herta with the fastest time, as Jamie said, by just over a tenth of a second to Timo Bernhard in second for DHL Penske Racing. And there's a DHL car in the wall at turn number eight. And oh dear, it's Ryan Briscoe. Ryan Briscoe in the wall at eight. He's gone straight on local yellow at the moment. Just seems to have missed his breaking point and got three quarters of the way around the corner. There's a nasty bump there and a change of surface from the tarmac. He goes under the Corvette bridge and, yep, big wiggle just after the change of circuits. Oh, he's really unlucky. Almost got it slowed down and turned in, and then realised it's not going to happen. Hands off the wheel. Looks like, oh yeah, very unlucky. Very unlucky indeed. As soon as he got off the racing line, he just couldn't get the front end Michelins to bite. Red flag while that car is recovered. And I think that might... Oh, now there's a lot of water around that car. I think that's come from the tyres, though, not from the Porsche. With just 3 minutes to go, that might be it for this session. Let's quickly go down to Bernadette, who has some news, I think, in the pit lane. Or was it you, Jamie, up with transport?
Jamie.
Ah, hello, Jamie.
That was me, John. I just checked in with the transport team, and that car has gearbox problems. They're going to have to change out the gearbox. They will not have time to do that before qualifying. So when we talked to Tim earlier, and he mentioned how important it is to get every single minute out of the track time that we have, especially at a street circuit where the timing's very limited, they are going to miss out on that entire qualifying session and the last couple minutes of this practice session. So that team is very disappointed right now.
As we thought, the checkered flag has come out. Jim Roller was listening to the team transmissions from Ryan Briscoe back to the Porsche team. Jim, tell us what you heard there. If you're still listening to us in the TV truck, you faded up. Oh, he's not listening to me, or he's gone shy for just a moment. Sounds like they're going to just take it back and have a look at the car in the pit lane. There's a little bit of water being spread out from the tyres there. So that's it then for the practice session. Leaves the timing and scoring monitor with Brian Herta by a tenth of a second from Timo Bernhard for, well, and then just 0.036 back to Ryan Briscoe, who was pushing hard, 28.7 and 6, the top three. Guy Smith, another 0.06 of a second away in fourth position. And in fifth, another tenth and a half back is David Brabham. The top five cars separated by less than 0.4 of a second over 2.1 miles. 14 corners, 0.4 of a second. It's a fraction of a second per corner. A fraction of a second per gear change. That's what we're dealing in here in the world-class American Le Mans Series. Sixth place for the best Audi. It's Marco Werner in the number two car. Suggests to me that he'll be qualifying. In fact, it is his turn, isn't it? Talked about this earlier on. Werner and McNish to qualify the two and one car. And it's Alan McNish who's in seventh position. Hello to Kelly McNish, who I'm sure is listening in at home in Europe. Alan's another 0.3 of a second behind his teammates, and the two Audis are second and 1.4 seconds behind Brian Hurt this time. In eighth position, Adrian Fernandez, a little off the pace of the other two Acuras, which are both in the top five. Adrian Fernandez's car with a 17.2, 15.9, the worst of the other Acuras, and obviously a 15.5 for Brian Hurtner. So the Adrian Fernandez car just slightly struggling at the moment. This is the Lola chassis, one of the two Lola chassis, of course. Acura engines in the back of two Lolas, and the 26 car, the 9 and the 15 car are the Lolas, and the 26 car, of course, is the Acura ARX 018, which was the development from the Courage chassis, but so much work done on that now that it's been re-designated as an Acura chassis. Not the car that's leading at the moment. In 8th position, that Adrian Fernandez car. So in 9th is Andy Wallace in the second of the Dyson Porsches. 1.17.3 for Andy, 1.7 seconds away from the best time. Then some larger gaps, only tenths or half seconds between most of the top 8 or 9. And then 2 seconds back to Klaus Graf in 10th position. And that problem for Ben Devlin in 11th, that car, we still to see that car come out. More from the GT classes in just a moment, but let's go down the pit lane. And Jamie Howe. Jamie, everybody in the pit lane. GT's getting ready for their qualifying session.
Everybody is in pit lane working feverishly right now, John. They the crews have new sets of tires to put onto the cars, Michelin, Yokohama, Dunlop, you name it, they have it. That's one of the great things about the American Le Mans Series. There are so many different manufacturers in the cars and in the tires, and that's something that some of the fans here at the track don't know because of other series that they've seen use one kind of tire, one kind of car. So it is something exciting for them to watch this weekend.
Thank you very much, Jamie. I've just had an automated phone call from the Detroit Main Library telling me that I've got overdue items. I'm sure I haven't. I will check, though, when I get home. In GT1, Jan Magnussen is leading from Ollie. That's tickled me, that. From Ollie Barretta by the almost now standard couple of tenths of a second between the 3 and 4 car. In GT2, now here's a battle for you. Jimmy Brunny back to the top of the timing and scoring monitor with the 61 car. He was quickest this morning, remember. 125.1 is well on par with what he did this morning. In fact, he's quicker than this morning's time. The prototype cars have failed to get through. Oh dear. In second place in that session was the 31 car of Dirk Müller and Peter Dumbreck. And in third, the 62 of Mika Salo and Jimmy Mello. So it's Ferraris 1, 2 and 3 in the GT2 category. And that's as far as I can go with that, as the timing screen has been blanked. Now that water that's come out of the tyre wall is going to be a bit of a problem on the exit of turn number 8. Some feverish sweeping by our hard-working corner marshals and the American Le Mans Series safety team, and they're firing up the leaf blowers to try and blow some of that water out. But at the moment, there's damp track on the exit, and that is going to take a bit of drying out here. Now, the car that caused that accident and incident was indeed the number 6 Ryan Briscoe car, and that car is back in the pit lane. Bernadette, what's the news?
Well, so far everything seems positive down in the number 6 Porsche 10 over here. They're removing the nose. It's all bodywork. It looks like all bodywork. They're checking the suspension, but it doesn't look like there has been internal damage to the car yet. So far everybody is remaining pretty positive over it. But a couple of the guys did say that there's still so much dust on the track that if you take your hand and you wipe it across the track, it's just white dust and no rubber on the track, which is causing a problem there in turn 8.
Yeah, and as soon as you get offline, it's very slippery indeed. And we've got some water there at the moment, which is also going to add to the problems. I'm thinking that this might just cause us a tad of difficulty for a little while and maybe a slight delay here, as the corner workers had no choice but to start trying to spread that water out so that it can evaporate quickly. Well, then the best thing might be to get some road tyres over that and start running the safety cars around the track and try and dry it out and dissipate the water with some road tyres. I just noticed the Vitesse cars going out of pit lane. My service is not required as Vitesse car driver this weekend. thus far. Although we have got an addition to the fleet, which hasn't quite made it yet. And I'm still hopeful of getting a drive of that before the weekend, that being a new V10 Viper, which I believe is en route. Yes, I know, dear listener, you're just thinking, they're going to let Hangdorf loose on a road course with a V10 Viper. With his reputation? Are they mad? And last time I disgraced myself in a car at a racetrack was, in fact, a Viper at Paul Ricard, but that was a very, very long time ago. In one of the Orica GT1 cars. As Olivier Beretta will no doubt tell that story, if he's prompted. So still vicious sweeping going on, frantic sweeping going on, as onto pit lane comes the 45 Flying Lizard with who at the wheel? I think that was Bergmeister. Now, one of the other Porsche teams who have been really up against the clock with two cars needing remedial work after the morning session, the Tafel Racing team. We thought we might get the 73 car out. It looked like the 71 car with its gearbox replacement and the diff replacement might have been a bit longer. Let's find out how things are going on with Jamie down in the pit lane, and she's with Jim Tafel.
Well, John, that number 73 car did get back out on track. And Jim Tafel, you drove this morning when the incident occurred. What did the team have to correct coming into this afternoon session?
On the 73 car, we had to replace two radiators and the nose clip. Basically, those are the couple things that we needed to get done.
And is the car ready to go for qualifying?
Oh, yeah. Dominic's behind the wheel. He's going to do a fantastic job. He did a great job this morning, and he's going to pick up right where he left off.
All right, you have an interesting place in the team. You're both the team owner and a driver in the number 73 car. What is the crew doing back at the tent right now to get the 71 car back out?
Well, we had a few pieces to put together on that. We should be ready for qualifying. That was a pretty big hit we had this morning, and we're just doing everything we can, working very desperately to get it all pieced back together so we can go qualify.
All right, that's Jim Tafel with Tafel Racing. We're certainly glad to have them back and back into this qualifying session. As he said, 71 car took a hard hit this morning. Another car that took a hard hit this afternoon is Ryan Briscoe, and he's down with Bernadette.
Thanks, Jamie. All right, Ryan, tell us from your point of view, tell us what happened on that turn.
I was just testing my braking points and went in a bit deep, and I knew I was going to go long, but I was deciding whether to just stop the car and turn around in the runoff, and then I thought I was slowed down enough to make it round, but I just got on the marbles and couldn't turn the car, so it's unfortunate, but luckily it looks like we've only got some cosmetic damage and we should be good for qualifying.
Very good. Has the grip not improved to you either since this morning's practice to now?
I don't know. The conditions are changing and the car balance has changed for sure. I think it's more a case of the balance changing than the grip, but I was expecting the track to be getting faster than it has done.
Okay. And the water, too, that was around you on the track, that was, just to confirm, that was from the tires, not from your car?
The what?
The water around the area where you... Yeah, around the turn 8, there was a lot of water. That wasn't from you. Okay, he does. All right. Thank you very much, Ryan Briscoe. So from his point of view, I guess he didn't notice any water around there, John.
I'm pretty certain it wasn't from the car, Bernadette. Thanks for trying to clear that up for me. I'm sure it came from inside the tyre wall that's sitting there at the Chevy.com corner at turn number 8 on Wednesday before the bulk of us arrived. Jamie was here, and the weather wasn't too good, Jamie, was it?
No, it was very similar to our last round at Mosport. It poured and poured and poured, lots of rain and thunderstorms in the area. So if the tires were bumped, it could have been water coming out of that tire wall. There was a lot of it to get stuck.
I have some bitter experience of hitting tire walls in various form of motorsport, from karting upwards. And despite months of seemingly bone dry weather, you hit a set of banded tyres, and almost out of nowhere, it seems, there's always a shower of water. It did collect inside each of the tyres. And nothing, it doesn't matter, as I say, how long it's been dry for, there always seems to be something come out of it. I shouldn't be talking about these exploits, as Bernadette reminds me, the woman to drive the Viper.
John, I'm shotgunning the Viper. John, don't say negative stories right now. You're a great, excellent driver. I think they should let you drive it.
Thank you to the fan club down in the pit lane there. It's the American Le Mans Series Radio Network Detroit Sports Car Challenge presented by Bosch. Round 10 of the LMS for 2007, and our first visit to Belle Isle, and we're delighted to be here. As I look out at the booth, onto the start-finish line, with the pits just just beyond the very, very green turf. Look off to my right, and at the moment the sunshine is glistening across the Detroit River through the trees. It's a parkland setting, for those of you who don't know. 2.1 miles, 14 corners. Some slow technical parts of the track, but some very quick and committed corners as well, including this last set of sweepers over the start-finish line, and also heading around the back straight from turn 7 to turn 8. Very wide and very, very quick indeed, with the faster cars, according to the telemetry I was looking at this morning, hitting about 170 miles an hour through there this morning. And the top speeds of all of the cars, very similar around here. It's just how quick the cars get up there. A lot of the cars being close-geared and low-geared to punch out of the corners as quickly as possible. The good news is that water is drying up very quickly at turn number 8. And any second now we'll be going green for 20 minutes of qualifying for GT1 and 2, where we'll set our first two poles of race weekend. Don't forget tomorrow, warm-up, and then the whole race live from 3 till 6 Eastern Time with the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, exclusively live and uninterrupted coverage of round 10 of the ALMS. Our TV colleagues delaying the coverage on speed, and indeed even XM Satellite Radio putting back the live, normally live coverage on Sport Nation Channel 144 till later on in the evening. But it's all live and all free here on the ALMS Radio Network, every round of the American Le Mans Series right here. And if you've missed any of the action this year, don't forget you can download it on demand. www.radiolemans.com. Look to the audio archive and the ALMS from Sebring to Mosport, and indeed all of the Le Mans 24 hours coverage that we produced this year as part of our commitment to top class sports car racing. That's all there as well. Radio Le Mans presenting the 24 hour coverage from the Nürburgring as well. That's there too, if you want to relive some of the better sports car racing moments of the year. Download it to your MP3 player or play it back on your computer. Now, the American Le Mans Series here this weekend, fan activities Saturday, our driver autograph session, 11:15, 11:15 in the Meyer Family Fun Zone, and paddock pass holders can chat with the crew of Penske Racing during a tech talk, the team transporter at the paddock at 12:15 on Saturday. The Cymru girls available for autographs and photographs at 1 o'clock at the American Le Mans Series merchandise tent in the paddock. All this and more, what keeps the American Le Mans Series for the fans. Chevrolet is the official pace car of the American Le Mans Series and the official pace truck of the International Motorsports Association. Chevy is redefining the very concept of driving. Chevrolet's vehicles are set to dominate America's landscape, both on and off the racetrack. To learn more about Chevy's revolutionary lineup, including the all-new 2007 Chevy Silverado Motor Trend Truck of the Year, Corvette, and an impressive Chevrolet SS lineup, visit the Team Chevy trackside display and take the Chevy Challenge to experience the entire lineup of Chevy vehicles. Visit your local Chevy dealer. Chevy, an American revolution. Audi would like to welcome you to the Belle Isle Grand Prix and invite you to see the all-new Audi TT. Beyond pure design, it's pure performance. Also experience the new S5 Performance Coupe, the car that brings race-bred design and engineering to the street, fast, powerful, and at the Audi display tent now. And don't forget the Audi R10 TDI on track this weekend, the only diesel-powered race car to win the 12 hours of Sebring, the 24 hours of Le Mans, and races in the ALMS Championship. See the Audi R10 TDI race today and follow its continued success at AudiUSA.com. Now, as for the gasoline-powered cars in the American Le Mans Series, the ALMS has partnered with EPIC, the Ethanol Promotion and Information Council, to make E10 the official ethanol-enriched fuel of the American Le Mans Series. Of course, with the exception of the diesel-powered Audi race cars, everything else in the ALMS runs with E10 fuel throughout this 2007 season. Epic is an alliance of ethanol producers and industry leaders who have come together to spread the word about the benefits of ethanol through information and promotional programs. Epic is a non-profit organization. It's overseen by a 9-member board of directors. And to learn more about the Ethanol Project, visit www.drivingethanol.org. Now, earlier today, we had the semi-final of the Klein Tools Pit Crew Challenge. Number 4 GM Chevy Corvette team walked away with $10,000 and progressed through to the final at Laguna Seca. And Klein Tools are the official hand tool of the American Le Mans Series. In business for over 150 years, Klein Tools is the leading manufacturer of professional hand tools and offers tools for construction, electronics, mining, communications, aviation, security, audio, video, electrical, transportation, and many other fields. Klein Tools constantly striving to meet the demanding needs of trade professionals who earn a living with their tools. Klein Tools, the official tool of the American Le Mans Series. Now, those of you here at the track today, if you want to be even more in a part of the American Le Mans Series, then make sure you sign up for the American Le Mans Series Fantasy Racing, presented by Lowe's Home Improvements. As a team owner with a salary cap, you have the flexibility of choosing the teams you want to race and the races you decide to enter. Players have a chance to compete for over $15,000 in prizes. So whether you're a first-time racer or a real fantasy specialist, there's always something new and exciting for everything. The American Le Mans Series Fantasy Racing, sponsored by Lowe's Home Improvement Store at AmericanLeMans.com. Now, Lucien Picard is designated as the official watch and timekeeper of the American Le Mans Series. A logoed clock at the start-finish line to track the time through the race. And don't forget, if you're in the market for a fine Swiss watch, remember the LP Watch Group, the official watch of the American Le Mans Series, at the series on-site merchandising this weekend and via AmericanLeMans.com. Actually, don't forget, whilst you're away from the track, a great way to keep up with the action is the American Le Mans Series website, www.AmericanLeMans.com. Links, features, up-to-the-minute news, race information and schedules, as well as live timing and scoring, merchandising, and much, much more, including, of course, the ALMS Radio Network. That's the official website for the American Le Mans Series, AmericanLeMans.com. Podcasts on there as well, audio and visual ones too. Kumho Tyres returns for its third season in the American Le Mans Series with a multi-car effort in the LMP2 class after capturing class wins at Sebring, Lime Rock and Road America in 2005. The highlight of the 2006 season was undoubtedly the company's third place finish at the 24 Hours of Le Mans with Miracle Motorsport. In 07, BK Motorsports, Van der Steyr Racing and Intersport Racing are all competing on Kumho's. Well, Intersport actually aren't now. They've just swapped back to Dunlop. Autographs and photos with the Kumho girls at the American Le Mans Series merchandise transporter in the Mayer Family Fun Zone at 1 tomorrow. Just still waiting for these cars to roll out of the pit lane. And it looks like we are ready to get this 20-minute qualifying underway for the GT cars. You'll see throughout the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, the Vitesse program cars on the circuit. This is a new initiative in 2007 to demonstrate the relevance between the American Le Mans Series manufacturers' race programs and the vehicles that these manufacturers put on the street. Opportunity to get up close to the R8, Porsche 911 GT3, Corvette Z06 and the Audi RS4 race car on display in the ALMS paddock as well as on the track during hot laps. It's the Vitesse program for the American Le Mans Series, hopefully having a Viper with that series as well over this race weekend and for the rest of the season. Well, cars out on the circuit, start the clock, 20 minutes as we will set the first two poles for the first ever American Le Mans Series race here at Belle Isle, the Detroit Sports Car Challenge presented by Bosch. My name's John Hindorf. This is the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, live from trackside in the pit lane. Jamie Howe and Bernadette Sanicola. It's the Corvette number 4 that's out of the box quickest, and already at the now infamous turn number 8, heading back towards us. It's Ollie Barretta in that car by the helmet. We'll get that confirmed as the car comes back around for the timing and scoring. And that's in fact been confirmed by our ever vigilant pit lane team. Thank you to them. And It will be Beretta then who gets the opportunity first to take a flying lap of this 2.1 mile 14 turn circuit. Here he comes. Oh, rumbles right under my feet. Heads down into turn one, down one, two gears, waiting to get on the power. The change of direction through one and two is quite impressive. Big bump on the exit of turn number two, unsettling all of the cars, particularly the heavier GT1 cars. Already the Velocity yellow CompuWare GM Corvette is down into six, heading towards turn number seven, the right-hander that leads on the back straight. Really important to get this one right, using all the road on the exit and letting the big engine now power that car through this long, gently right-hand sweeping back straight down into the little left kink under the Corvette brake, and then into this heavy braking area for turn eight that's caught so many people out. The bumps there, clearly very difficult to keep the cars together on. Now through the back of the fountain, 9, 10, 11 and 12. 12's the right-hander, short straight now, possibly a chance for overtaking here in the race before coming on to 13 and then 14, which is just off to my right-hand side, and I'll see the yellow headlights through the trees in just a moment. There they are, he's coming back towards us now. Ollie Beretta pitches the car right at my commentary box and whizzes through the line. A 121.744, and that is some 2 seconds quicker than they went in this early session yesterday. Beretta then and his teammate 1.6 seconds behind them. Gian Maria Brini, the faster of the quick times in the 61 car as the Viper's gone off, but he's down the slip road at the moment. I don't think that's going to cause a red flag. Brini and Salo 24.9, 25.9 for the two Giuseppe Ricci cars. Oh, Van Overbeck it is that's qualifying the 45 car. Yes, of course, it's his turn. And the session has been stopped.
Cool the tires. Cool the tires.
And you heard the team there for Ollie Beretta. Cool the tires, cool the tires.
Car
very insistent.
Turn 10. Car off in turn 10. He's clear.
Excuse me, that's the 3 car that we're listening to. That is Jan Magnussen's driver. The Viper Competition Coupe off in turn 10, which is the right-hander, the left-hander rather, around the fountain complex, just in front of the fountain, in fact. He's gone off in a very odd spot there. It's the first time, I think, you've seen someone rotate it there. Time will continue to run, and already we've used up almost 5 minutes of this 20-minute session. Everyone will peel back into the pit lane while that Viper Competition Coupe is recovered. And thanks once again must be given at this point to our colleagues at TV who've got the cameras up and running, which means we can see the Audi TDI diesel power bridge at the far side of the circuit, and also the shadows which are lengthening. And there's going to be some real problems for the drivers on race day with the sun dropping behind the trees in certain areas of the track. Be driving right into the sun. It's going to be very interesting. Jamie Howe down in the pit lane.
Well, John, the race tomorrow is at the same time as qualifying today, so this is good practice for them. Maybe they can figure something out to block the sun out of their eyes as they go into those turns.
We often hear the drivers, don't we, Jamie, saying it's always a difficult decision of whether to take a dark visor or not. I would think with the race finishing at 6, there's no real worry about it going into the dark, and a tinted visor would be the way to go.
That's right, and I also have a little bit of inside information in that finding a tinted
visor. Wonder how you got that.
Finding a tinted visor for your helmet right now is a little bit difficult because the company that was making them has put a hold on those to concentrate on their sunglass program, so finding one's a little difficult. They might have to stick with the clear ones.
Oh. Now, I just wonder how you got that inside information, Jamie.
I'm just a good reporter.
And where are you off to on Monday?
I am off to my honeymoon on Monday.
Which has been on hold.
It has been on hold. We've had 4 back-to-back races. So we leave on Monday for the Mayan Riviera, and we will be gone for 10 days. I'm very excited.
She's wearing a very new pair of sunglasses by her sweetheart.
Throw that out there.
Very good, very good. And for those of you that don't know, it's Brian Sellers, who is the other half of Jamie Howe. To put it that way around, for a change. Girl power, you know. Keep that going. Just eight cars with times, and everyone will want to improve as we're waiting for that Viper to be recovered from the circuit, giving teams the chance perhaps to do just a little bit of tinkering. The 22 car, the Pinos Esperante, is on pit lane, and there are a number of mechanics under the bonnet. The engine cover, engine at the front of that car, of course, as it should be in all good GT cars. And Jim Howard in the pit lane.
Well, John, you mentioned earlier, you think that that Panos broke a bar, and I passed that along to Bill Oberlin, and he said, well, ask John which bar it is that we broke. I'd really like to know. So well, if you have any more advice for them, they'd be happy to take it.
I'm not sure about the bar, but the owner was absolutely incandescent with rage and wants some restitution, apparently. The course is open for qualifying. That's what I said in the commentary, that I just made that up as we were going along, just to say, to sound like something to say. Did they get to the bottom of the problem with the car, though? That's the point, Jamie. Did they actually get to they thought they had a breakage of some component there, thought it was springs to start with, and had gone the wrong way. Then the problem got worse and worse no matter what they were doing. So have they actually got to the problem of that handling instability with the Pinos? Hello, Jamie.
Sorry, John. I was getting an update on that Viper machine that is off track right now. They say that the car just absolutely went dead. It's the same thing that happened with the number 51 Panos earlier in the session. So they've pushed the car off to the side. They're not sure what's wrong with the car. The team's on their way out to the track to pick it up and look at it right now. So that car will not be back for qualifying. They have no power.
Before you disappear, did Bill tell you when he was taking the you-know-what out of me what was actually broken on that car? They thought they'd gone the wrong way with springs. Then the handling got worse and worse. Did they actually get to the bottom of what component they thought might have been broken?
No, they did not. And, you know, I spoke with Joey about that, too, because Joey was in the car this morning when they started to have all the problems. And Joey said that the track is very difficult right now because the Indy cars went out twice in between their morning session and now. There's a very definite line of rubber down on the track, and if you get off of that line, you wibble from side to side, and it's not an easy track to drive on with that Bridgestone rubber on. So they think that might be one of the contributing factors. Maybe their car is not set up right to handle that line that's down, so they're still very unsure about what's going on. They do have the car out for qualifying. Remember, the last couple of races, they've had to start at the back of the pack because Bill was running in Grand Am and missed the track time, so they're trying to do everything they can to avoid starting at the back of pit lane today, but it's not looking good for that team right now.
I'll pop over later and give them the benefit of my experience, shall I?
Will do.
If it's bad now, it could only possibly be made worse by Hindhoff and a spanner. To be quite honest, it was never my forte. I could just about change the plugs in cars that I own. Thank goodness when things like electronic ignition came around and I didn't have to do points and all that sort of nonsense. We're back underway with just on half the session remaining, which is great, because what we get now... Oh, big slide by the 62 Ferrari. Almost clipping the wall, coming out of the Audi TDI diesel power turn, which is turn number 12. That was an immense slide, and Mika Salo doing very well indeed to hold that car off the wall. And on pole position with that wiggle. Good heavens. Salo, despite a close encounter of the concrete kind, has taken pole position, provisional pole position with a 124.6. Very good time indeed. I wonder if we might actually get down to a 123 second lap for the GT2 cars. Beretta is in the 4 car, Magnussen in the 3, and that's the way around they are on the track, on the timing screen rather, with just over a tenth between them. It's Salo in 62 from the 61 of Brunny, from the 31 of Dirk Muller, 3 Ferraris, 1, 2 and 3, and down at Giuseppe Ricci's pit is Bernadette with an update.
Well, actually, I spoke to Mika Salo earlier today, and I asked him how it was going so far. And ironically, after he just missed going into that wall right there, I said, you know, how is everything? How's the car? He goes, well, good. I haven't hit anything yet, and kind of laughed. So Mika Salo looking to stay out of trouble for this race.
Well, he was noticeably more circumspect coming out of that corner this time around. Really taking it much easier, getting on the power. And but Muller isn't, and this time Muller hits the same bump, and the back end of the car stepping out. He's Salo across the line. Does he improve? No, he doesn't. Magnussen's gone to the pole in GT1. So now it's three from four by 0.3 seconds. And now Jimmy Bruni, who's been quick all weekend. He's been the quickest of the Ferraris, in fact, and he fights back and pips his teammate by 0.088 seconds. And the two Ricci cars, fully half a second ahead of Dirk Muller in third place in the 31 Peterson White Lightning Ferrari. Best of the Porsches. This is a tremendous effort from Dominik Farnbacher. That car missing much of the session earlier because of that broken front radiator. Two radiators changed on that car. And he's the best Porsche in fourth position. And he's 0.3 away from Muller. Makes him the best part of 0.75 seconds behind provisional pole. Pat Long in fifth in the 44 Flying Lizard. His teammate Johannes van Overbeck in sixth. And Kellen is in seventh. So Porsche's 6th, 7th and 8th. But it's Ferrari's 1, 2 and 3. And Jimmy Bruni, who was outstanding at Mosport, having a very bad time of it with his stomach, had a very nasty tummy upset, but still managed to drive all of his stints despite having to get intravenous rehydration at times. He goes past me now and goes across the line. There's Salo. Oh, Salo's closed down on his teammate to just 0.015. He's Bruni. Does he improve? No, he does not. The two Ricci Ferraris, 1.24.586, 1.24.601. Where do you find 15,000? Mika, just go and find 15,000 if you don't mind. They're out there somewhere. Just over 6.5, or just on 6.5 minutes to go. Get offline here, and you're really going to pay the penalty. Anyone who isn't patient through traffic tomorrow is going to be saying hello to some concrete walls. And American Le Mans Series drivers have not been known for their patience in the last few races. So where's the challenge going to come from? Patrick Long, 0.7 quicker than the 45 car of Johannes van Overbeck. Patrick back in that team, just going through turn 8 on the far side of the circuit. Where's the challenge to the Ferraris coming from this weekend? Dirk Muller in third. Still just half a second between the top three Ferraris, 61, 62 and 31. Patrick Long, the best of the Lizards in fourth place and the best of the Porsches now, having just gone by Dominik Farnbacher's time. As in comes Jan Magnussen, the 1.21.0, adequate, job done, 0.3 seconds in hand over Olli Beretta in the fourth car. Now Pat Long's just gone through with a bit of space in front of him. He heads towards the opening complex now, turns in the 44 Flying Lizards. The Lizards car's back in their regular silver and red livery after the art car installation, if you like, at Le Mans this year. Troy Lee Designs coming up with a truly stunning piece of artwork. It's not fair to call it a livery. Lizards have still got some of their Le Mans merchandise available. Now here's Pat Long, and he's gaining on a slowing Ferrari ahead of him. And he's dragging Dirk Muller along with him. They're on the back of the circuit at the moment. And Pat Long's lifted off and lets Dirk Muller go by. Pat Long looking for a little gap. And there's his team talking to him.
Good job, guys.
And that sounds like Eric Ingram, I think, talking. Either Eric Ingram or Tommy Sadler talking to Pat.
Good job, Patrick. Do you want me to save my tires for a lap? No, I think you're okay.
Well, now, does that mean that he's going to have another go, or does that mean he's coming into the pit lane? Staying out, though, is Mika Salo. Clearly, he's having another go at pole position. His last lap was a 1:30, so clearly he let the heat just go out of his Michelin tyres for a little bit. His teammate, Brunny, is in the pit lane, right up on the curb there through 4 and 5. We almost got it up onto two wheels there. And this is a very determined-looking Mika Salo, more so than I've seen him for quite some time, and certainly taking more curb than I think we've seen anybody do so far. He's right at the edge of the circuit as he goes through that big curve, the left-hander into turn number 8, and brakes very late. There's plastic rumble strips on drivers right there. They can unsettle the car and tight to the curb on the right-hand side of the circuit as he swings through 9, 10, 11 and 12, which is a great little complex. Now, this is where he lost the back end of the car before. How quickly does he get on the power? He does. And the concrete patch again pitches the back of the Ferrari 430 into the air, snatching a gear as he turns right-handed into 13. Oh, so close to the wall in 14. Mika Salo looking for pole position, held at the moment by Gian Maria Brunny. He needs 15 thousandths of a second. He's gone through. He's not quick enough. A 24-7 though. 1:24.7. His teammate's car sitting up on the internal jacks. Tyre temperatures and pressures being taken. He's asking
for... Two minutes.
Up on the curb again. It's almost like watching a rally driver ditch hooking, as they call it. He's dropping the right front and rear tyre beyond the curb and using that to straighten the car up so he can straight line out of four and get the line right for 5 and 6. Tremendous stuff. 2 minutes left. He'll get this one and one more if required, as in comes Johannes van Overbeck. Only sixth place for the Lizard. The 45 Lizard, that is. Ferraris 1, 2 and 3. That beautiful screaming Ferrari engine working well. He's got the track to himself at the moment. Again, he's coming through to turn 12. Oh, you can hear the bump there as the car engine note rises. Snatches down one gear again, just as he turns in. He's only got one hand on the wheel at that point. Oh, right on the rev limiter as he comes out of 13 into 14. He's going to pass the commentary box now and goes across the line. 27-3. Snatched. Oh, he's lost time there, hasn't he? He's well down. He's going to have another go, though. Jim Roller in the TV truck is watching with bated breath as he comes to turns 4 and 5 this time. Will he go on the curb again? Yep. Jim, have you ever seen anybody take that line at all today? You're on the air now. It's quite remarkable, isn't it? I don't think anybody other than Salo could get away with that. He clearly feels that there's time to be gained by doing that, but the car's up on two wheels for half a second at least. It's Jim Roller. Yep, through into the complex after turn 8. 8, 9, 10 and 11. He is so close to the wall. If there was another coat of Rosso Red Ferrari paint on the flanks of that, the beautiful sculpted flanks of that 430, sideways again as he comes out of 12, he would be leaving it on the wall. It's that tight. I just want to listen to that engine forever. It's nice to have Mr. Roller back on the radio, isn't it? That's good. Turns right-handed across the line again, and there's the checkered flag. Does he get it? He doesn't. 24-7 again. So our pole position man in GT1 is Jan Magnussen down in the pit lane.
Yeah, and you're on pole today coming off of that win in Mosport. How is this going to help you for tomorrow's race?
Well, it's the best situation we could have hoped for. Johnny and I have been working on the setup this morning, and in qualifying the car was just great, absolutely perfect.
How did the track change for qualifying compared to the practice session and then the morning session?
Well, from the morning session to this afternoon session was quite a big change. And thanks. And you know, there was a lot more grip, and everybody was going faster. So we had to tune the car a little bit for that. but it wasn't big changes we had to make, and neither was it for qualifying.
Racing in Detroit is the Motor City capital of America. How important is it for Corvette to be racing here in Detroit?
I would say that this race, along with the Le Mans 24 Hour, are the two biggest races for us this year. Absolutely. It's very important. It's for GM, it's a big, big thing to have the race here. And for us to be here with the Corvette C6Rs, it's perfect.
All right, I know the city of Detroit is also happy to have you. The other man who's on pole today in GT2, Gian Maria Bruni, is standing by with Bernadette.
Gian Maria, congratulations. You're on the pole position. Qualifying for you today, how's it feel?
Oh, it's good. You know, we start from this morning, we were the quickest, and the second session too, and the third session we improved the car with my engineer. I think we did a quite good job, and you know, and after tried to learn from you know, my teammates Mika and Jamie, and just put my lap for the best I could. That was good. You know, I couldn't ask for better. It's my first street circuit with the car with the roof on the top. So.
And what was the difference? Do you like the street circuit better? You seem to be handling it very well. Excellent practice, obviously, today in qualifying as well.
Yeah, no, it's just fantastic circuit, you know. And, you know, I went out, I looked up a little bit the front tires and the quicker lap, but, you know, I was managed to be in pole. So I'm very happy for the team and for everyone. 1-2 again, you know.
All right, congratulations, Gian-Marie Bruni.
Jimmy Bruni, back to full health after his stomach upset at Motorsport. Didn't slow him down much there. And clearly, as my mother would say, what makes you bad makes you better. Or if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. To put it another way, Bruni on pole position for the 61 Ricci Ferrari. And just by 1/15 of a second, 0.015 a second from Mika Salo, his teammate in the 62 car in second. Dirk Müller in third, making it Ferrari's 1, 2 and 3 in GT2. He was another half a second further back. 3/10 back from the Ferraris, the first of the Porsches of the 44 Flying Lizard, Pat Long on qualifying duty today on his return to the American Le Mans Series. In fifth position, the only one of the two Tafel racing cars that was out there this afternoon. The 73 car with two replacement radiators, the 71 car still being worked on but will be back out for the race, the warm-up and the race tomorrow. And rounding off the top six, Johannes van Overbeck, the 45 Flying Lizard in sixth position. Kellenis in seventh in the 18 Porsche, and Joey Hand, the eighth of the GT2 cars that went out, the 22 car, a 128.9. Let's have a word with Pat Long. First of the Porsches, fourth position, and just under, well, it was about 0.8 of a second away from Gian-Maria Bruni's new lap record, of course, setting the qualifying record here on the 2.1 miles. Close, but I would think slightly disappointed, Jamie, is that fair?
Pat, you do look a little bit disappointed. On your return back to the American Le Mans Series, did everything in qualifying play out as you had expected?
I had a quiet suspicion that there was going to be three cars that were pretty sure bet. So to come in fourth is a small consolation, but almost like a pole position for the 911 Porsche. We think we have them over a long distance, and we can hopefully run with them, but they've been awful tough, and they caught us off guard in the final practice, so we knew they had a lot in qualifying. But we stepped up our game almost a second from final practice with the same sort of tire situation. So have to be happy with that. So, no, not too disappointed to answer your question.
You've missed a couple races over the last couple of rounds of the series. The GT2 battle has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger since you've been away. Coming in this weekend, is it exciting? Is it nerve-wracking? What is it like in your shoes?
Yeah, certainly it's exciting. Definitely highly competitive, as it has been since I came here in the beginning of 2004. I think the difference is that you got different manufacturers running for podium spots, and that's really exciting to see. This series has always been very, very competitive, and I think GT2 has as much competition as any class out there. So every time I get a chance to come back here and run with one of these Porsche customer teams, it's always great. Just very, very happy that the Lizards came and asked me to drive.
Being a Porsche factory driver, there's always that chance, and we've heard rumors that it might be true that we could see you behind the wheel of a prototype. Can you tell us anything?
I'm pretty hopeful for Petit Le Mans that I'll be there in one category or another. To be honest, I'm just very, very fortunate to have a job with Porsche and to be asked to drive in all different types of teams and cultures. So any you know, opportunity is a good one. But sure, I'd like to be in a P2 car. I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And you know, hopefully I'll be there.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you back no matter which category you're in. Thank you.
Thanks.
You know, when people say to me back in Europe, and we get this a lot, why are there no great American road racing drivers? that are coming out of the US at the moment. And I just say, Pat Lung, that's the answer to the question. Pat's been across in Europe, he's been competitive in Europe, he's been competitive in everything he drives, and I have no doubt if he got into a single-seater, which he has done in Europe, or he got back into another single-seater or indeed a prototype, he would be just as competitive as any of his contemporaries. A very good ambassador for American road racing. Pat Lung, great to have him back. And let's hope he does get a prototype drive soon. We said the same about Sasha and Timo, Roman and the rest of the Porsche Junior Team drivers who have moved up into the P2s, and they have certainly fulfilled their promise. I wonder where the next young American Porsche driver is coming from. Now, we're getting ready for the overall and P1 and P2 poles, obviously. The prototype battle about to go green. And Bernadette has some news on the Intersport team, who should be out there and competing, are they?
They are competing, not just on the track, too, but John and Clint Field, I looked over about 5 minutes ago, were arguing over who's going to qualify. Both of them want to qualify at Petit, and whoever doesn't today will at Petit. So it's been a big argument if you look over a couple minutes ago.
No, after you.
Exactly. And so Clint Field is getting into the car, so looks like his dad will be the one at Petit. Dad won the argument.
Yeah, isn't that always the case? Dad's always right. Doesn't matter how old you get. I've got exactly the same with my father. That's tremendous stuff. No, I don't want to qualify here. You qualify here. Go on, it must be your turn. That's fantastic. In fairness, very entertaining, I can only imagine. I have to say that John has been a tremendous force at Petit Le Mans over the last few years. John and Clint are a formidable driving talent. And in fact, Jamie, is John one of the drivers who've been at all of the Petit Le Mans? Certainly been at most of them, hasn't he?
That's right. John Field, I don't know if he's driven in every single one of them, but he did drive in the first one in 1998, and he's one of the few drivers who's driving again in this year in 2007. It is the 10th anniversary, so that is quite a landmark for John Field. His son Clint has his own records to hold, but John's been around in the series since it started.
I really first started noticing John after he'd been to Le Mans, which would be 3 or 4 years ago, and he came back a changed driver, much more confidence, was prepared. I think he then believed what we all knew, that he had the ability to run with these factory cars and factory drivers, and once he had the self-belief, he was there, and that Petit Le Mans that year was absolutely outstanding. He was carving big chunks of time out of some of the factory drivers. What were you doing 10 years ago this October then, Jamie? What was your life consisting of?
10 years ago, I was in school in October.
Mm-hmm.
That's
doing
what?
Doing. How old would that have been? What sort of grade would you have been in then?
Well, my birthday's in October, so I'm not sure what I would have been doing at that time or how old I was.
Nicely dodged that question. My birthday's in October as well. Now, Bernadette, what were you doing 10 years ago this October?
Just getting my license. Driving. That is scary, and I don't think I've improved much since the 10 years.
Oh, that's enough.
Who knows? You've driven with me, John. I don't know. With her.
You rode in the golf cart with her, and?
I did ride in the golf cart with her.
And what do you think? Competent?
Well, I've never been in a car with her, so I'm not sure. She's a little shaky in the golf cart, though.
Golf cart's got more steering play than a Winston Cup car. It's unbelievable.
I at least use its power to the max. I mean, I've always enjoyed the power.
Bernadette was more than adequate through traffic last night when we were heading down to Ford Field for the Bills-Lions game. And we made very good time and did get to our seats with hot dog and beverage to see the opening series of the game, despite leaving the hotel moderately later than we'd expected to. Now, someone on pit lane that we weren't perhaps expecting to see, Jamie.
That's right. The BK Mazda's car is back out on track, getting ready for qualifying. Jamie Bach is behind the wheel right now. John Doonan standing by from Mazda Speed. John, this car is back out into pit lane. What sort of things had to take place in order to make this happen?
Well, we had a little bit of an off, but the guys worked extremely hard, put the left front corner back on, a little cosmetic work, and we're going to go out and qualify.
There's a new Mazda that's out right now. We've seen it on TV. Can you tell us any details?
Not sure which car you mean.
Oh, the new Mazda advertisements, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, we have a new motorsport strategy, which allows us to showcase all of our involvements and put together a new Mazda ad, which shows a little bit everything. So we're proud to be able to be involved in so many different things.
One thing that Moss is involved in is many, many different forms of racing. You've created this ladder that we've talked about several times this season. We're going into Petit Le Mans, where you normally add a third driver into this P2 car. Any thoughts on who's going to be behind the wheel this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Rafael Matos, the 2007 Champ Car Atlantic, powered by Mazda champion, will be in the car. So we're great to have him back after running him at Sebring. So.
All right. Well, we'll be glad to see him back. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.
If you haven't seen the ad that we were talking about there, it's a tremendous piece of advertising with all of the different Mazda racing programs, including the MX-5 Miata, the race car, the LMS race car is out there. And it is a stat confirmed by the SCCA that more people are racing Mazdas every weekend than any other form of manufacturer racing car, which is quite remarkable when you think about it. A firm, not a huge firm, Mazda, and yet they have really grabbed the attention of club racers, national and international racing. Still the only Japanese manufacturer to have won at Le Mans. That was the year I had chicken pox and missed Johnny Herbert's big moment. A fact that I remind him of, that I've never seen him win at Le Mans. Alan McNish is out in the number one Audi and already pushing very hard through turn one. The tyres are making more noise than the TDI 5.5 litre V12 engine, working so hard. If I turn the effect mics up, listen to that. You can listen to the tyre scrub around the circuit. He's coming to the right-hander. You can actually hear the tyres almost right on the edge of a square. Oh, he's right close to the wall on driver's left as he came through 14. Here he comes past me, and he goes through to a 1:15.8. for his opening bet. He's got a Porsche ahead of him, and that is as quick as the Porsche has been in all bar one session. We had a 15-1 in the first practice by Sasha Masson, and the 15-8 is as close as they've been. Put it in perspective, Marco Werner, Magic Marco we call him, for his qualifying exploits, a 1:19.5 on his opening lap. And McNish has target acquired to the RS Spider ahead of him. It's the 6 car, I think, that's right in front of him as they come into it. McNish has taken time out of him. It is indeed the 6 DHL Penske Porsche. And on board is Timo Bernhard, I think, as they come through the complex at 10 and 11. And McNish has backed off and given the 6 car some room. 1:15.8. Brian Herter in second, 1:19.4. But McNish has just pulled that lap out of nowhere on his first flying lap. Everyone else taking a couple of laps to get up to speed. Thank you. It is Timo in the 7 car. It's Ryan Briscoe in the 6. As Marco Werner, second flying lap, goes to provisionally pole position at 1:15.5. Alan McNish will be really annoyed that he got slowed up by Briscoe. He caught him, and that was on the Briscoe's quickest lap, by the way, which was a 16.6. McNish surely on for something quicker. Through goes David Brabham to provisional pole. No, Smithy going through as well, Guy Smith. So it's changing as every car crosses the line. And we're down into the low 14s already. Guy Smith of 14.3. 14.4 for Brabham. Well, maybe a 13? Surely not a 12. How hard are these guys going to try? Who's going to blink? Who will push the envelope just a little bit too far? Brian Herter now looking to be on a quick one. He's in fourth position. A 15.6, as quick as that car's gone pretty much all weekend, and all of a sudden Alan McNish has bumped down to fifth position again. Across the line goes one of the, and there's a spin by Werner. Werner in that tricky section, 10 and 11, and everybody having to check up. Now, what happened there? Werner clearly pushing very, very hard indeed, coming out of the left-hander at 10.
ISR.
Oh, he lost that really, really early. Coming through 10, the back end of the Audi was sliding. And so much weight, of course, with that diesel engine. Also sits a little bit higher than some of the gasoline engines. Quite a tall engine, the V12 TDI. He very gentlemanly pulls out of the way for this Team Citroën Sport car and comes straight into the pit lane. Seems like Audi have found something. Brian Herter, by the way, was on a quick one, a 14-1, quick enough for provisional pole position for a moment as Guy Smith has got into the 13s. Oh, tremendous stuff from Smithy. Four-wheel drifting the car through the early part of the lap here, and that was just absolutely tremendous. Actually, that was in 8. He just four-wheel drifted the car through 8. I haven't seen anybody do that all weekend. Now, that really did look like a rally driver. This is like something from 40 years ago when cars didn't have downforce. Guy Smith is driving as if he was in the 1960s, and that big hand of downforce wasn't pushing the car onto the concrete and tarmac surface. A 1:13.9 for Smith, and he's still on it. He nearly clips the wall as he comes out of turn number one, and there's oil flags, slippery surface flags down at 4, 5 and 6, and Guy has had the lift off.
P1 at a 13.9, P2 at a 26 car at a 14.1, 20
from 26 from 6 at the moment under the Firestone Bridge, pitches it into the first corner, and the car gets very, very close to the outside. In fact, if that set of tyres hadn't been pushed back a little bit this morning by Robin Littell, I think Smithy might have just clipped that. May have to buy Robin a small aperitif this evening. Improvement for Ryan Briscoe up to second place, the 6 Porsche. We haven't seen Brabham throw down the gauntlet quite yet either. Timo Bernhardt in the number 7 DHL Penske Porsche, down in 6th position at the moment. Top 6 cars all under 1 minute 15 seconds, 1 second between them. Porsche leading, but it's Guy Smith who's turning into pit lane. Is he? No, he's having another go. And David Brabham, just as we mentioned him, now we see what the Aussie can do. He's just gone to 2nd position. Porsche, Acura, Porsche, Acura, Acura, Porsche. Top 6. 29, 6, 26, 15 and 7. David Brabham just 0.027 of a second away from pole position. Brabham and Guy Smith, teammates of Bentley, of course. Brabs in the 3rd place car in 03, and Guy Smith in the winner. The only difference between those two cars, pit time really. Amazingly, the winning, I think I'm right in saying that the winning Bentley that year spent a little over a minute an hour on average in the pit lane, and a Bentley led at the top of every hour of the 24. And Guy Smith is pushing again, but he dives into
midline.
In fact, that's Brabs, my apologies.
A little bit more front would help.
Brabs just asking for a change on the car. Jim Roller reminding me that it may well have been the lowest ever time in the pits in recent times, at least for the Bentley that year. It was quite astonishing. And Brian Herter goes through, past me, and goes to pole. A 13.8 for the black XM satellite radio car. Well, we know it does well on this type of circuit. It was very quick indeed at the opening stint at St. Pete's in the hands of Marino Franchitti. The Acura seem to like this track. This is the... Oh, and he's drifting the car around as well. This is proper stuff. Have Michelin decided to throw a set of radial tyres at these cars and not told anybody? Because they're moving around, the bumps on the circuit really making the downforce less effective than normally. Now this, we're now down to IRL car pace here. This Brian Herter is only half a second away from the fastest of the IRL runners earlier on today. Dario Franchitti talking to me on the Midweek Motorsport Show on Wednesday night was saying to me how much quicker these sports cars are in the quick corners because of the downforce, and although they're quite a bit heavier and don't have the power of the IRL cars, sometimes on these circuits, as through goes Herter, does he improve? No, he doesn't, to 13.864. So he's got the two fastest times, Brian Herter, at Mid-Ohio. The pole sitting Porsche would have been on row 3, inside of row 3 at that, as a mistake by Ryan Briscoe, and he's gone straight on, missed his braking points. No real problem for him. That's at turn number 8. Not making the same mistake as last time when he tried to get around the corner. So you can say one thing, he's learned his lesson. Now, where is the 7 car? We haven't seen too much of it. Just gone through on pole position at 1:13.6. Good heavens, what a battle this is, and we've still got 7.5 minutes to go as Marco Werner goes ahead of Alan McNish in 7th place. The Audis, well, they're also runs here at the moment, and it's not very often we've seen that. Strange to see the 16 Dyson hasn't done much either. That's down in 9th position and is 2 seconds away from provisional pole. I can't believe Andy Wallace will let that situation lie for a while. Too much longer, at least. So Timo Bernhard has snatched away provisional pole position by 0.2 seconds from Brian Herter and Guy Smith. All of those three first cars, 7, 26 and 20, all under 1:14. Herter into the pit lane. Also, it looks like Wallace in the pit lane. Yes, it is. Timo touring back to the pit lane. Pit lane is being told to come in, and he swings right-handed into the pit lane entrance. There he is, just coming under the trees in front of me to my right, and crossing in front of me now as across the line to start another lap is Marco Werner, and also still out there is Ryan Briscoe. He's just started in the lap as well. And we've got the two Magic Marco Werner still giving it a go down at turn number 4, 5 and 6. Love that complex. It's a bit tight, a bit nadgy perhaps for these big Audis, but Werner's making it look good.
Alan is still on the track. Let's wait and see what his lap time is.
And there you heard the competitiveness between the two Audis. They're managing their expectations and their competitiveness, measuring them rather against each other. Into the pit lane has come the Fernandez car, also in Clint Field in the 37 car. Clint Field is not going to be happy with me, but I have to say this. That creation is 9 seconds on a 2-mile lap off Timo Bernhard's provisional pole time. And that is not where they want to be, that car. He hasn't even beaten the GT1 cars, and that clearly isn't right. As Werner comes into the pit lane, Alan McNish will follow round and do one more lap, will he? Or has he gone into the pits as well? No, he's gone past me. McNish starts another lap. Rumours persist of a change of car for Intersport. Now, who's got anything left in the last 5 minutes? Jamie, who have you been watching leaving the pit lane?
Well, Brian Herta in that Andretti Green Acura was in pit lane, just went back out. So I think that he and the team both believe there's a little bit more left in the car to get out during qualifying.
Well, Ryan Briscoe's just improved his time and goes to a 13.3. So it's the two DHL Penske Porsches who, almost Audi-like, if I dare say this, have found the time again when it matters. A 13.3 for the 6 car, a 13.6 for the 7 car. And Brian Herter, all of a sudden, from needing 0.2 seconds to claim pole position, now needs nearly 0.5 seconds. Now, can he find that kind of speed in these dying 4 minutes as McNish comes round to the last third of the lap, coming out of turn number 13. I think he's pitting. Yes, he is. He will have a readout on his dashboard, what they call a delta time, that tells him if he's up or down on his best lap. And there's no sense in wasting time and effort as Andy Wallace has gone through for another go. Now, Ness Hurt has gone through behind him. Meantime, Ryan Briscoe looks to be pushing on still in the sixth car. Hurt, for me, the man most likely at the moment, as also still out there, Jamie Back in the number eight Mazda powered car. In comes Ryan Briscoe. At the moment, it's job done, and the yellow front row for the DHL Penske Porsche, as through goes David Brabham, the Acuras perhaps with the last hurrah. 3 minutes and 30 seconds to go. Brian Herter on the far side of the circuit into the heavy braking zone at turn eight, just misses the red squirrel that got across the track. Did that catch Brian's eye because he slowed right off? That squirrel is alive by the skin of its teeth. And Brian has definitely lifted. Hard to say whether that just put Brian off for a second, but he certainly was very circumspect through 8, 9, 10 and 11. Let's see if he starts to push again on the last part of the circuit. I don't know how the squirrel got on there. Yep, you know what? It did take his eyes. Just seen the replay, thanks to Jim Roller. And you saw him actually turn his head and look at it. And that was enough to make him miss his turning point. Headline for tomorrow's paper, Acura pole foiled by squirrel. Not often you see that in a motorsport newspaper. Herter, I wonder if that was a Porsche squirrel then. See, if this was Formula One, there would have been a squirrel scandal. Obviously, Squirrel Gate. Brian Herter coming to the same portion of the track now. He'll swing the car left first and then braking hard under that. Brakes so late for this turn in. Right on the bridge. Oh, uses all of the exit right under the tyres. On the left-hand side of the track. He's already through 9, 10. A bit of a wobble in the middle of 10. It's very bumpy through here. Through to 11. Gets the power on. Oh, listen to the traction control working there. You can hear it burbling and cutting the engine out. Oh, he must have touched the wall through 13. Towards me now, he needs to find half a second. Has he done it? He has not. A 14-1. Has he got anything left in the tyres? He hasn't slowed down through turn two. He's missed his braking point. He's got a chance of another lap after this one. Misses his braking point at three. Just trying to push the envelope a little too hard. Also still out there, just gone through, is Alan McNish. He's only 0.017 behind his teammate. And a matter of some Audi pride there. David Brabham still out there. He's done a 14.9 last time around. And Andy Wallace still out there as well. Timo Bernhard having a crack at pole. He's just gone across the line. Bye, we've got some experience on the track here. Bernhard, Herter, Brabham, McNish. Still having a tilt at pole position.
If you want to know more about Globecast Radio, where we are, who's doing what, and more about the cars we test, log on to www.0157.org. Features, interviews and reports. A website for those that love cars and motorsport. www.0157.org. The website of Globecast Radio.